Step into the accelerator, leapers, because it's about time. Once again, it's about time, the Quantum Leap podcast, whose mission is to pod right what once went wrong. I'm your host, Caliban, and holy smoking retro rockets, I'm excited for today's show, mostly because I'm joined by a special guest this week. He's the co-host of the Virtual Theater podcast. It's Gooey Fame. Gooey, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on your show. I've really wanted to be on for the longest time, actually.
Yeah, it's great to have you on. I'm glad that you could leap in with us today. And as far as like us being a duo here, I wouldn't presume to take the role of Captain Galaxy in this case. I'm just as happy being Future Boy, although that does mean I have to talk to kids about their dead dogs.
You know, you'd handle it well, it seems like, though.
I'll try to handle it.
I was moved by this scene.
I will try to handle it as well as Sam Beckett, who has 7 doctorates, but his real superpower is his empathy, I think. But we'll talk about that a little later. We're here, as always, to talk about another episode of Quantum Leap. And this week, we've got a very special episode. It's an episode of a TV show about a TV show. It's an actor playing a time traveler, playing an actor playing a time traveler who meets an actor who wants to be a time traveler, and it all takes place just 2 days after the dawn of the space age and the launch of Sputnik 1. It's an episode called Future Boy. But first, Gooey, let's talk about virtual theater. On this show, we talk about Quantum Leap, and we talk about, of course, the pop culture things that we see in Quantum Leap. But on your show, you're talking about a leap of a different kind, a leap over a chasm while mushrooms and things chase you. You're talking about video game movies and entertainment.
Yeah. Though, you know, I could, there's kind of a kinship here, I feel like, with this show. I kind of got the vibes of like, well, it's a little different, but just like Tron, you know, leaping into this like totally different world, taking on this different persona.
Yeah.
And there's something, there's something in video games where you kind of do that too.
Quantum Leap sits at an interesting point in the sort of landscape of entertainment, in that it's just right before the huge boom where video games changed everything. Like I'm sure you know better than I, but the PlayStation came out in like 95 or something like that, 95, 96.
Yeah.
And it's really like when the disc systems came out and the whole PlayStation-Sega war began, that like I think people's eyes really shifted to the home TV, you know, instead of like theaters and even TV shows, you know, were affected by the fact that everything is kind of gamified now. And if Quantum Leap had come just a little later, or if they do this reboot that, fingers crossed, that they're talking about doing, you would have to have more of a like a game element to it. You would have to acknowledge, I think, the influence of video games on media today.
We need a Quantum Leap for the gamers.
Yeah, that's right. a double jump, and then a curly muffin as well. I know that speaking of nostalgia, there is a very nostalgic property that's getting a renewal that's coming out in the next month or so, and that is the Mortal Kombat film. Are you guys covering that on the show?
Yes. Yeah, we're planning to, and that's pretty great because we did the original movies previously. We finally got kind of caught up on that. And those, you know, have their own legacy and their own history for different reasons. And so I'm kind of like excited about the movie, actually, to see how it turns out. There's some stuff that's like, oh, it looks like a bit might be kind of neat, but you know, it's kind of a fine line to walk. I feel like the tone of Mortal Kombat is tricky to get.
Yeah. Well, you know, on this show, it's about time we talk about Quantum Leap, which itself in a lot of ways is about looking back. And I remember, speaking of looking back, I remember seeing the Mortal Kombat movie in the theaters and being, even at that age, being kind of like, that was it. A little disappointed.
Yeah.
But I also remember playing the game, you know, in the arcades, but also playing it, you know, on Mortal Monday, getting it for home console. You want to get the Genesis one because you can do the blood code and have real blood.
Oh, for sure.
No sweat, yeah. And I don't remember exactly how because I never like just skipped school. I never skipped school throughout my entire career. But there are a lot of ways that you could get out of school for different programs and stuff like that. You can kind of like finesse stuff. And I did do that. And I remember getting Mortal Kombat and playing it with a friend of mine on that day. And I can't remember how I got out of school, but I do remember specifically sitting in my room and the sun coming in at an angle that I'd never seen before because I was always at school, you know, at that time of day.
That's
and
amazing.
Feeling a little dirty, but also ripping spines out and having a great time.
That's such a great memory. I love that.
So, yeah, I mean, I would love to see Sam or possibly somebody else in the Quantum Leap project leaping into a video game designer, you know, like he leaps in, or he's an actor in a video game, so he's got a full body suit with the mm-hmm. ping pong balls, and he's like, oh, boy.
There's some, like, I feel like that the show, like, this is new to me, but I was kind of surprised by the magic of the world, like, because he leaps back into this story where this other guy is kind of on the cusp of, you know, discovering this magical thing as well. And I was like, okay, so it is a bit more than like just a device to like move from episode to episode.
Yeah.
So like I could totally see them stretching the realms of like maybe not going into a video game, but you know, like what else can you do?
Yeah. And that's certainly, I mean, they always take advantage of the shock that Sam experiences at the end of each episode when he's leaping into the next, which is just like, I've said it before in the show, but it's just like an A number one device. But yeah, like even in this episode, as we were talking about in the episode last week on the show, about him leaping onto the Future Boy set and not knowing where he is and being like, wait a minute, have I leapt into like the future? Is that where I am? And no, sadly, you're on the set of a small network show in St. Louis in 1957. But
that was what was great about it was at first I was like, okay, maybe he is in the future and like they're making a choice to make it like a little like goofy, cheesy, like 50s looking.
Right.
I was like, I could see that and like it actually being fun, like, you know, to not make it look like as good as you could possibly do for the time, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But no, that was cool though. That was a good twist.
Usually when we do end up seeing the future on the series, you know, there's the constraint of a mid-level you know, network show there. And of course this is the early 90s, so CGI is just not really there. So it's usually a lot of like creative lighting and a lot of like smooth 90s sort of surfaces. But I could see that. You know, why wouldn't we go back to ray guns and Greek potato dinner?
What if the future was like that? Yeah,
you don't know that. Yeah,
it's kind of like on shows like this where it's like some of the stuff it inspires like becomes what the future is.
Yeah, for sure.
So I could totally see them being like, okay, Quantum Leap, let's make that the future.
Yeah, right. They look back to look forward. So thanks for being on the show. You were talking before about your background with Quantum Leap, but from what I understand, you don't have much of a background with Quantum Leap.
No. It's always seemed interesting to me. I like Scott Bakula. And
sure,
I'm like,
sure.
Okay, this could be cool. But like, I always kind of, I wouldn't say I like thought negatively about it, but I'm like, okay, this seems like maybe kind of a goofy old show that I could get into.
Yeah.
But then I watched this episode and I was actually like, oh no, this is amazing. This actually rocks. Like it, like there's no, you know, there's no like asterisks by it. I was just like, no, this is really cool. So you really, for having me on, you picked a great episode to like kind of get me into it. Cause I was sort of like, oh, I could probably watch this whole show, I think.
Yeah, I thought the sci-fi aspect might appeal to you, and I'm glad that it did. And it's interesting because, you know, at this point on TV in the late 80s, early 90s, you know, like sci-fi has been around for a long, long time. So it's not like it would be insane to have like a primetime sci-fi series that everybody likes. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, like it sort of sneaks it to you. It like kind of spoon feeds you a little bit of sci-fi. You know, the premise of him traveling through time is all well and good, but then it's immediately just downshifts into boomer nostalgia, I mean, you can run forever on boomer nostalgia.
Yeah, they love to do that.
Yeah, and so having a guy like Scott Bakula, who, you know, is known for his movie work, he's known for his TV work, but, you know, no real connection to sci-fi, like having him in this role, and he's so genial, having him be the kind of connection there. Yeah, it's just a perfect formula for a show that was very, very successful.
Yeah, yeah, he grants it some authenticity, right?
For sure.
The whole cast does, really.
Yeah. And he's, you know, he's from St. Louis, where the episode is set.
Oh, well, perfect. I actually didn't know that.
Yeah. Well, let's get into our episode here. But first, we need to leap to a conclusion and give the answer to last week's trivia question. Last week, of course, we talked about the episode 8.5 Months, where Sam leaps into teen mother-to-be Billie Jean Crockett. Billie Jean lives in Claremore, Oklahoma. And our question was, which Native American actor and entertainer was born on the Cherokee land on which Claremore would one day stand? Do we have a guess for this one? Native American actor...
No, I have no idea.
Claremore is in Rogers County, which was incorporated from Cherokee lands in 1907, and it was named after Clem Van Rogers, who was a Cherokee native rancher, the father of Will Rogers. And of course, Rogers, you know Will Rogers, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Cowboy philosopher, entertainer who said he never met a man he didn't like.
That's cool. I actually have some family that lives in that area.
So really?
Yeah, I should know that maybe. But
that's fascinating. yeah, why didn't you know that, hey?
I don't know. I'm not up on all this trivia.
Will Rogers is also, he was a social commentator, and many people don't know that that famous quote of his, he never met a man he didn't like, was in reference to Leon Trotsky. Rogers was asked about Trotsky in 1926. Rogers had attempted to meet with Leon Trotsky during a tour through the then nascent Soviet Union for the Saturday Evening Post.
Wow. Will Rogers.
Yeah. And I don't think it was like to say how great communism and socialism was, but it was more just... You know, because he was a humorist and he was a guy who wrote sort of ironic articles. And so it was more just like, well, I don't, you know, this guy might believe one thing and I believe this, but I've never met a man I didn't like.
Yeah. Yeah. Regardless of how much he meant it or whatever, I like any statement like that that probably at the time ruffled some people's feathers,
yes,
you know?
Right. Yes. Yes. He definitely tweaked people's noses, I think. We'll have a new trivia question at the end of the episode, so stick around. But first, let's leap into today's episode, Future Boy, the 13th episode of the third season of Quantum Leap. It first aired on March 13th of 1991, and it was written by series writer Tommy Thompson and directed by Michael Switzer. In this episode, Sam leaps into Kenny Sharp, the actor behind Future Boy, the sidekick of Captain Galaxy on Captain Galaxy's Time Patrol series. And the date here is October 6th, 1957, and let's do a little Swiss cheese whiz and fill in any holes in the listener's memories about that time period. As mentioned in the episode, Sputnik had recently launched on October 4th from what would come to be known as the Baikonur Cosmodrome in Kazakhstan, USSR. Sputnik 1 was the first man-made satellite. It orbited for 3 months, completing 1,440 orbits of Earth before burning up on re-entry on January 4th, 1958, having traveled 70 million kilometers or 43 million miles around the Earth. And it was a really big deal. Obviously, the Cold War was in full swing at this point, and it made a lot of people nervous that the Soviets had, you know, quote-unquote, beaten us to space. But interestingly, that paranoia isn't really explored in this episode.
Yeah, yeah, that was kind of interesting because I felt like, oh, they picked kind of... sort of a specific date, I guess, because they were mentioning these things, and I was like, oh, okay, I wonder if that's going to come up. But it's more of just like, because it is like looking, it's like before we have some of this science fiction, like in real life, you know,
yeah,
like
yeah.
All these things people are imagining of. I mean, we had the satellite, but that's it.
Yeah. I mean, Quantum Leap is a show about the 20th century, about the second half specifically of the 20th century, and we've had Red Scare elements before on the series. We did an episode called Nuclear Family, which was about the Cuban Missile Crisis. But in this instance, I think it was picked, as you said, specifically to just – it's more about like the 1950s setting, and I think the idea, the hopeful forward-looking attitude that Captain Galaxy – has and the character of Mo has, that Sputnik is something that's amazing. It's something that humanity has achieved, and we will achieve many amazing things if we are, you know, don't give in to fear.
Yeah, it was kind of cool, like, that, I mean, it didn't really, maybe it's because you have the main character having the foreknowledge, but he wasn't, I think that's kind of what was cool, was like, he wasn't really like super freaked out about Sputnik or anything.
Right.
So that was kind of neat.
Yeah.
Like having someone in that setting talking about it, like,
yeah.
as a positive thing, you know?
Yeah. And then in just a couple more years, Neil Diamond will land on the moon. Like he says later.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That was great. Yeah. Good bits.
Other events from October of 1957 include David Lean's classic film, The Bridge on the River Kwai, got its premiere in the UK on October 2nd. It would later open in the US on December 14th of that year. The Russians may have launched Sputnik on October 4th, but the good old US of A launched Leave It to Beaver on that same Friday night. October 16th is the date that Antonio Vias Boas, a Brazilian farmer, claimed to have been abducted by extraterrestrials. Similar stories of encounters with aliens had existed before Boas' account, but his is one of the first to receive widespread exposure, and it happened 4 years before the reported abduction of Betty and Barney Hill in 1961, which is kind of thought of as like the first major abduction story.
Mm. Okay, so that it was in 61, because I always imagine like the 50s as this time of like people being psyched out by aliens and outer space and
yeah.
stuff.
Well, I mean, I don't think that it's a coincidence that they send a satellite up in October, and then just a week or two later, you know, or a couple weeks later, a guy's like, oh, no, aliens came down. You know, that people were
yeah.
thinking about this at the time. It was on people's minds. It was stressing people out. And some people, not that I'm completely denying that aliens exist, but some people take that stress too far. It takes them to another place.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, but hopefully not literally.
Yeah, it seems like with some of these cases, yeah, who's to say? Who's to say?
I suppose. if a man with 7 doctorates can travel through time, then yes, who's to say?
Yeah, yeah, I was sold on that by the end of this. I was like, okay, if two people have thought about it in this world, that must make it real.
Yeah, I suppose so. October 21st would bring the first U.S. military combat fatality in Vietnam. Army Captain Harry Kramer of the 1st Special Forces Group was that person. Kramer died in a training accident while training South Vietnamese Special Forces. And of course, we've already talked about the Vietnam War on this show, In the Leap Home. And, you know, Vietnam is kind of sprinkled throughout Quantum Leap, but
sure.
Again, it's one of those things that I think, especially for baby boomers, it sort of is...
A touchy subject, you think?
Well, a touchy subject, but definitely like a focal point, you know, for their past. I think you can remember where you were at different points in it. Maybe you went, you know, maybe you were drafted or not, or enlisted.
Yeah, it seems like there would be, if they wanted to, there would be a lot that they could discuss with that show. Yeah.
Yeah. One of the things I like so much about Quantum Leap is they find so many stories to tell that aren't just, it's another Vietnam one or something like that.
Yeah.
Of course, Al, served in Vietnam. And that's a big part of his character. So that's always kind of there. But and on Halloween of 1957, Toyota began exporting cars to the United States, beginning with the Toyota Crown or the Toyopet Crown, which would be withdrawn from the American market the next year. But the Toyota Land Cruiser was also released that year and remains to this day Toyota's longest running model.
Oh, congratulations, Toyota.
Yeah. They saw an opportunity, they took it, and of course, a lot of consumers were hostile openly to foreign cars. But now, you know, who can stand against the might and the reliability of the Toyota Camry?
You know, I've always had the Chevy cars myself, not really for any reason. That's just where I've wound up. So
you really,
yeah, just coincidence.
Is virtual theater paid for by Detroit General Motors?
Yeah, we're trying to bring it back.
I think it's funny that so when the Crown first came out, it was a four-door sedan, as far as my research tells me, but it was small. You know, it was compact, and I think it was probably not popular for that reason. And also, it didn't help that it was called the Toyopet. Toyo Pet was a name given to that car and a few other cars in Toyota's line because of its kind of small and cute nature. And the Japanese love that stuff, so they're happy to call it a Toyo Pet. But over here, not so much. You have to have a big manly car.
It's got to sound cool, yeah.
So that didn't work out too well. Let's talk about the guest stars for this episode. And we've got some great guest stars. First and foremost, of course, we've got Richard Hurd, who plays Mo Stein, a.k.a. Captain Galaxy. Hurd is a legendary character actor. And he's one of those, he's a top 10, hey, it's that guy.
Oh, yeah.
He's got over 150 IMDb credits to his name. Just check this out. So he played, early in his career, he played James W. McCord Jr. in All the President's Men. And speaking of Watergate, which we talked about on this show in episode 103, Starcrossed, G. Gordon Liddy, the chief operative in the White House plumbers, died just the other day at the age of 90.
Yeah, kind of
good
prophetic
riddance
here. Yeah, I guess.
You know, clean living, I guess, right? Hurd has appeared in the 1983 miniseries V and its follow-up, V: The Final Battle, as John, the Supreme Commander of the Visitors. He had a recurring role on Sequest, DSV, as Admiral William Noyce, and a recurring role as George Costanza's boss, Matt Wilhelm, on Seinfeld. He also appeared recently as Roman Armitage, the leader of the weird white people cult in Get Out.
Yes, that is what I am very familiar with him, but that's like kind of what comes to my mind now.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because it's like recency bias, but.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember, he's great in that.
Yeah. I remember when we get to that part and you see the little video, you know, about what's going on in the town, and you see him and it's like, oh, it's that guy.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what happened to me in the theaters, too.
This is the first of his two appearances on Quantum Leap. He would return with several other guest stars for the series finale, Mirror Image. And he unfortunately passed away last year on May 26th at the ripe age of 87.
I remember that, yeah. Yeah.
We were talking before about sci-fi on primetime TV, and this is the guy, right? This is the guy. He proves that it's possible because he was in V, you know, he was in Sequest. He's been in these roles and worked consistently, you know, in these things that are kind of like Quantum Leap, not full-blown, you know, you're in space sci-fi. They're like just a little change, a little difference that allows you to accept these worlds.
They're like, they're simultaneously to me, it's like it's slightly more highbrow than you would think. And then it's also, but it's still got the sci-fi, like, lowbrow-ness to it, too. Like, the goofiness.
You know, I would never call sci-fi lowbrow, but I understand what you mean.
Yeah, I'm not lowbrow, but he's in his, like, little machine or whatever, and it's like, wow, this is pretty goofy, but in, like, a good way, yeah. And it works that it's like him in throughout the whole episode, like he's kind of carrying the whole episode. I feel like it's like he's the star of it, even though you've got Scott Bakula. It's like this guy is the star of the episode,
and his character. That's why he's perfect casting for Mo Stein, because he is doing the same thing. He is playing a sci-fi character in kind of a goofy show on this local TV station.
Yeah,
and at the same time, he's the guy that we're talking about when we talk about Scott Bakula, because he comes from the stage and Macbeth. You know, he is like a real deal actor, and he's out there trying to make, you know, these tinfoil suits and everything. He's selling it to the audience, you know, and making it real.
Yeah, that aspect too of him being, this Shakespearean kind of guy. It's just all these levels of, of the meta. It's so good.
I like how seriously he takes the role too when they're offset, like at the roller rink scene, where usually the joke is in things like that, where like Galaxy Quest, when they're gonna, you know, talk to the crowd and they're like, yeah, whatever, great, what a savings. But he's like really like, you know, excited about how the kids are excited about it, and he's talking to them, and it's just really neat.
Yeah, he believes it. Yeah.
Yeah, like any good actor, he totally believes it.
Yeah.
Deborah Strickland appears as Irene Kiner. Strickland would appear in several other guest roles on TV in the 80s and 90s, including two appearances on the ABC series China Beach. George Weiner appears as Ben Harris, and Weiner is almost as big of a hey, it's that guy as Hurd was. Weiner has over 200 credits on his IMDb.
Wow.
He's probably best known as Colonel Sanders in Spaceballs or as Rabbi Nochner in the Coen Brothers' A Serious Man. But he's appeared literally everywhere, up and down the dial and at the multiplexes. Probably one of the most successful character actors of all time. And he's barely in this episode. This is his only Quantum Leap appearance.
Wow, it seems like a big commitment to get this guy for this. I don't know.
I guess so. I mean, I've like we said before, like he's been in major motion pictures. I guess Spaceballs, major motion pictures, a Mel Brooks picture. But you'll also see him in little stuff too. So I think he just likes, you know, working. But
yeah.
As the episode opens, and Quantum Leap does this, it's very good at doing this. There's a couple different ways the story can go until we find out what it's really about. In this case, it's like, well, Mo needs help, and he might need to be committed. But as it opens, you think that, like, Harris is going to be, like, the villain, the bad guy of this piece, because he's really mean to Kenny yeah. and Mo, and he's complaining about the show and everything. But then – and also, you probably recognize the character actor, but then, nope, there's a swerve, and he just disappears after the first half of the episode.
Right. I love that whole sequence, too, like – how much they let it play out.
Yes.
It reminded me of how they have that whole like scene of filming in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, mm-hmm. where it's like, wow, you're dedicating a lot of time to this. Granted, this is like a 45 minute show, but I still felt like this is a long scene in like a good way. And I loved how, like, improvisational it was. And they're like, yeah, just keep going.
I've never been in a major, like, Hollywood TV show, but I'd imagine that it probably works something like that. But then you've also probably got somebody like him on the other side of the Quantum Leap cameras going, this is the line. Come on, stick to the script.
Right.
There's a meta, like, element to the whole thing.
What was this like? Yeah, was this kind of how they did it then? Because it, like... was it live or something? Because I was like, well, why are they letting him just say whatever?
We will talk about that a little later. I'll answer that question in a bit.
Okay, cool.
Alan Fudge appears as Dr. Richard Sandler, the psychiatrist. Fudge was also a prolific character actor. He appeared in films like The Natural and The Man Who Wasn't There, another Coen Brothers film, as well as the TV shows Man from Atlantis, Eyeshod, and Paper Dolls, and played the recurring role of Lou Dalton on Seventh Heaven, and he passed away on October 10th of 2011. That's my birthday, but very sad that he passed away. David Sage appears as the judge in this case. He doesn't have a character name. And Sage was a character actor in the 80s and 90s and aughts. He appeared as Senator Eli Jackson in the 1996 film The Birdcage, and he has appeared in guest roles on TV series such as L.A. Law, Babylon 5, and the pilot episode of The West Wing. And there's two kinds of judges on TV. There is... a minority female, which is good, but I feel like you get a lot of shows have like a very white cast, and then for some reason they are in a courtroom and they always make the judge like a minority female.
Interesting.
Which is fine, but is itself a little bit of a typecasting. Or an older, rounder guy with big glasses, and I think David Sage fits that perfectly.
Okay. Yeah. He does. Yeah. Perfect vibe for that. My go-to judge I always imagine in my mind is like the southern, like My Cousin Vinny guy.
Oh, Fred Gwynne was the judge in My Cousin Vinny. Yeah. Herman Munster.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Anytime I picture a fictional judge, he's like southern and kind of sassy.
The role of Small Boy in the episode was played by John Christian Gross. Gross was also on an episode of L.A. Law. And get this, he was born on October 10th, 1982.
Oh, okay.
That's so weird.
Something's happening then.
He's mainly played cute kid in roles in the 80s and 90s. He appeared in the movie Kindergarten Cop in 1990. But his strangest role of all was his connection to a 2016 YouTube conspiracy theory that Dylan Roof, the Charleston church shooter, was actually a crisis actor played by John Christian Gross.
Really? Wow.
Which is complete crap, of course.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah, I've never heard that theory.
I think it was a really, it's one of those things where he's got maybe a dozen IMDb credits and he's got a very particular distinct name. So when you search for him, his credits come up and then this thing came up. And I'm sure it was just some crackpot who's like, oh, he's got kind of a bowl cut in a picture I've seen. And then Dylan Roof had kind of a bowl cut as well. So
don't get a bowl cut.
Yeah.
And be a little white kid, I guess.
Yeah.
I feel bad for him, actually, that probably comes up so easily, searching for him.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's not up to him, but, you know, get some more credits. And then push that down on the Google results.
Well, if they ever do the Dylan Roof story.
Oh, man, that would be perfect symmetry. Yeah. Like, yeah. This guy tried to ruin his life, and then he gets him a job. Sometimes Hollywood has real-life happy endings. Last but not least, my favorite part of the episode, where we look at who our Leap E is for this week. And our Leap E is played by Matt Marfoglia. He plays Kenny Sharp in the episode. Like a lot of Leap E's, Marfoglia doesn't have an extensive acting resume. In fact, his only other credit is that of student on a two-part episode of Head of the Class. However, Matt has not been idle. He is a longtime server at upscale bistro The Tasting Kitchen in Venice Beach, California, and he was interviewed last year on CNBC about the economic impact of COVID-19 restrictions on the service industry.
Oh, sweet. I love a service guy. That's great.
Yeah. This is a real upscale, you know, kind of joint in L.A. in Venice Beach. Mm. And apparently he's been like the personal waiter for several different celebrities, including Jodie Foster. He's the guy that gets called out, you know, when somebody important is coming in. And he's I found his picture online because he's a singer-songwriter. You can find him on bandmix.com at Matt in LA. And he's kind of like a Wolverine looking guy.
Like, oh, interesting.
I think he already kind of looks like him, but he's definitely, somebody said, you look like Wolverine. And he's like, you're damn right I do. So
that's when you start looking at your hairstyle. And
so he's got
like,
the
okay.
Cool beard. Yeah, and then he looks like he slept, you know, on both sides of his head. The hair goes up like that.
I love that.
It's a good look, though.
I'm starting to notice that haircut more now in stuff. And I'm like, wow, Wolverine haircut.
I have a theory as to where that came from. I watched a film the other night. Called Play Misty for Me, which was
Clint Eastwood's that's first the movie. Last time I noticed it.
Oh, really? Okay, there you go.
I was like, this is point zero of Wolverine hairstyle.
Yeah, yeah. So John Romita Sr., the actor who invented Wolverine, or at least the look of him, must have been watching Play Misty for Me. Well, let's leap right into our discussion of the episode itself. And something that I found fascinating about this episode was the way that it depicts, we don't actually see like mental health care, I guess, being administered, but the way it depicts mental health care in the late 50s, normally you would be looking at a cuckoo's nest situation, right? Where it's the people are being mistreated and it's very bad. Or you'd have something that was really insensitive, like, oh, this guy's got a screw loose. He's a real screwball. But I was surprised at how sensitively it was portrayed. And I'm not trying to bury mental health professionals of the 50s. I'm sure many of them were very good at their job and very, very sympathetic. But Mode ultimately doesn't end up going there. He ends up staying with his daughter instead, which is a better fit. But if he had gone there, I don't feel like it would have been like the most horrible thing necessarily.
Yeah. Yeah. I felt like it painted it more as like, I don't know. He just really, he wanted to pursue the science stuff. And
yeah.
And so like it did, like that wasn't the end all be all of it, I guess. So
yeah.
I didn't focus on it as much as like that being the big question, even though it was, you know, it kind of decided where he was going to end up being.
Yeah. The way that he is obviously a very eccentric guy, and it's that line or that question of that I'm sure maybe I haven't experienced this yet, but people older than me have watched their parents possibly decline and kind of go, is Dad being a goof or does he really not remember like what my birthday is? You know, that that phase that you get into where you're not exactly sure. And then when you've got somebody like Mo, he's already a guy who's like dramatic and emotional because he's an actor and he's a sci-fi actor. So he's thinking about this and that. I'm sure he's probably built props for the show before. And now he's working on a time machine in his basement. And it's sort of like, is Mo okay? How's Mo doing?
Yeah, I think that was what kind of like, he just kept it very grounded for me in his performance of that. Because You know, they had the part where he's got, like, the tinfoil hat and he's running away or whatever, but, like...
the part where he throws himself out the window of the
that
judge's
That was wild. That was so wild.
That was so intense.
But, like, overall, like he's not playing it like your typical thing when you see someone and they're like, oh, they've got a couple screws loose, you know? Like, he is eccentric, but, like, he feels, to me, he felt like kind of a real... person, and then it helps that, like, he's actually onto something with his little experiment or whatever. But I don't, he felt very authentic as a character.
Yeah, he is that guy all the time, and maybe as he gets older, being distracted or maybe being that guy a little too much is what gets him in trouble. But I just love that idea of his obsession with, as is revealed, you know, at the end of the episode, his obsession with, like, his own career, and not in forwarding it necessarily, but being trapped in it. And then over the years, realizing that it has, you know, separated him from his daughter, losing his wife, you know, early on. And he doesn't want to do anything, that's selfish with the time machine. He just wants to go back in time and sort of get those years back. Something that we all experience nostalgia and regret, but he's manifested that in this time machine that he's built in his basement.
I think that is the key to, like, how well he was able to portray the role, is that he didn't have just some, you know, mad scientist crazy idea. It was the obsession was what it was. And and that just comes across as, like, he deeply cares about it.
And that ties back to Sam in a great way. This is a good leap, in my opinion, because my favorite I've talked about this before, of course, but, like, my favorite leaps are the ones where Sam has a real stake in it. You know, it's something that goes right to who Sam is as a person, and not just when he in Catch a Falling Star, where he meets, you know, his piano teacher that he had a crush on as a boy, and she's in love with the guy he's leaped into, so he wants to stick around for that. But I mean, like,
oh my goodness,
philosophical things, because he sees himself in this guy, and so it becomes not so much a question of having to convince Mo or having to convince the daughter or having to convince the judge or the psychiatrist. It's kind of Sam that we have to convince here, because he goes all the way in defending him, and it becomes a very personal thing. And he's pulling the Miracle on 34th Street thing at the end, where, you know, he brings all the letters in. If they wrote these letters to Captain Galaxy, then he must be Captain Galaxy.
I was USPS, like, that's not lie. A convincing argument,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah. But, well, it worked in Miracle on 34th Street, but... And where Sam is really the one that needs to let go here, you know, he's got the prediction from Ziggy that this guy will definitely die, but it's also he really sees his own dreams and his own work and aspiration in that, which of course manifests itself eventually in the predestination paradox, where he's learns the string theory from the guy that he taught the string theory to.
Yeah, it really felt like this is the way. This is, like, the perfect formula, I feel like, for, like, a show like this, where it's, like, episodic, but then, like, it does have this, like, greater lore, you know, like, there's this other magic going on, and it also, like, affects him, and he's very concerned with it, and, you know, because I really kind of just expected him to kind of be along for the ride, and he has to make a decision, and then, you know, boom, he's off somewhere else, but it's, like... Yeah, it's, like, cool that, like, some of that stuff will, like, be carried with them, you know?
Yeah, that happens almost every week. And every leap could be, I think, like a movie. It could be a much longer story. But from a storytelling perspective, because you've got, you know, 44 minutes or whatever it is, Sam has to get right to the heart of the problem. And it's a little weird sometimes that being a stranger to a lot of these people, or just, you know, inhabiting somebody who is in their lives, that he's able to suddenly get them to open up. But that's, like what I said before, that's why Sam's power, his superpower, is empathy, because he's able to, as a total stranger, get that woman to talk and give him background about her relationship with her father. And he realizes, oh, I understand what's happening here. And later on, he's able to, you know, ultimately convince her to help to reconnect with Mo, mm-hmm. and take care of him in his older years instead of just strangers taking care of him.
Yeah, I do like how empathetic he is, and I like how like passionate he is about it.
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah. That, I was very surprised by that a little bit.
That scene in the roller rink, and the thing with the dog. Like, I remember seeing this as a kid, this show when I was younger, and I remember the balling up the string. You know, him getting the letter from young Sam. But the thing that got me this time around, as an adult, was just the kindness and the empathy that he had with the kid, because they could have been like, whatever, kid, just eat some popcorn, get out of here. But he's like talking about, yeah, we went to doggy heaven and he's so happy and it doesn't hurt and he loves where he is.
That was one of those things where I was like, yeah, it connected with me because I just thought, like, I don't know what I would say to a kid.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
And he just knows the right thing to say, like, almost throughout the whole episode. Like, obviously he's not when he's pulling out the letters. I was like, come on.
Yeah,
I guess that's what made him that's what made him was that he had that passion.
Yeah, he's always I don't think that I've ever heard them say it like in dialogue before, but I always just assume that he's a little, every time he leaps he's sort of groggy, you know, like he's dizzy or thrown for a loop.
Okay.
Because obviously, like, you know, in the world of the show, the joke is he's now in a position that he wasn't seconds ago and somebody's yelling at him or he's got to do something. But yeah, he was like, it took him a long time to figure out that he was on a TV set. And I feel like even the audience is like, come on, you're on a TV set.
Oh, well, I took it as like he doesn't have the chops to like fill in, which I always love watching someone have to, like, this happens a lot with acting where it's like actors have to act like they can't act, and he did a really good job.
Oh yeah, no, he's
it.
Great at that. Yeah, yeah. But he's like literally like acted before, like in a leap, and he's I can't remember if he's read cue cards, but come on, man. Speaking of things that we don't believe, what did you think about the fact that apparently Mo did build a semi-working time machine in his basement?
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah?
I thought that's totally what I mean, like, that, because it's like, with this show, I was sort of thinking there's, like, the premise that it's like, okay, there is this sci-fi thing that exists for him.
Yeah.
But it doesn't exist else. Like, I just thought he would then just be experiencing other things. But then it's really cool that when you go to this time, there someone else has figured it out. I thought that was pretty cool, actually. Like, that it's not out of the realm of possibility that, like, he could go in the past and there's like deeper sci-fi things happening then that you wouldn't expect.
Oh.
You know, it's a little bit like...
You're looking for a spinoff with Richard Hurd.
Not necessarily, but just like that... I don't know. I just thought like that it would be self-contained with him, and then like he would, you know, he wouldn't go other places and meet some other, you know, or like find some other weird tech, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I could totally see him going back to like the Napoleonic Wars and for some reason like some other time like Doctor Who style a little bit, you know, where it's like,
yeah,
not as crazy but where it's like, you know, a couple of things have kind of like leaked into this era too, because the time travel element does exist, so I don't see why not.
I suppose
other people could have been affected by it.
I suppose, but like, you know, Sam has 7 doctorates and he's got the backing of a, you know, a secret project association to use really know exotic matter and holograms and whatever he uses to time travel. So like that's all well and good, but like a guy just sticking like props together in his basement.
You're right. Okay, I totally get what you're saying.
Well, I love what you said, and I love that idea. I feel like I get a little jealous about, I like the fact that Sam Beckett invented time travel in 1999 and he's been leaping through time and space, obviously guided by some greater power. And like when they bring in like, oh, there's other times. Or like when he and Al switch places, or the Evil Leapers. Like, I don't like it when we hang too much on the premise. Do you know what I mean?
And so to have
like another guy also just be able to cook up a time machine in his basement is like, what? Although I do like what you sort of proposed. The other thing is, like, from a story point of view, I think it's okay that he fails, and he should fail. Otherwise, he was right the whole time. Like, the whole point of the episode is that both he and Sam need to be convinced that it's time for him to move to the next part of his life. But if he can actually invent time travel, then he could go back in time and give his wife calla lilies.
No. Yeah, I'm glad he didn't. And I totally, when you're talking about, like, evil leapers and all this stuff, it's like, yeah, like, I totally can see that. Like, I like the idea that it's like, oh, he's on to something, you know, like,
yeah.
that's all it needed. It kind of, to me, gave some credence to the premise, because it was like, okay, like, this is something that could exist in this world for other people. But like, this guy didn't, he couldn't figure it out. He's not quite there.
Yeah. Yeah, but then
it'd be awful if he did figure it out. Yeah,
and then but his work is ultimately realized in Sam Beckett. You know, he presents a part of that work and that theory that allows Sam to do what he does, go back in time, and save him from being crushed by a train. So it all kind of works out.
Yeah, sure. I do wonder. With Sam was like, when he's like going on with the string and stuff like that, I was like, I don't know. There was something that was kind of goofy about that to me, where he's like, that's the way it's explained. But I guess it's like they got to dumb it down a little bit.
That's his,
to make it make sense.
Yeah, that's his string theory.
I love that. It was just very strange though.
I remember seeing this episode when I was a kid, and when there was that controversy a couple years ago about how Donald Trump drinks like a weirdo, I immediately thought of this episode and the way that Mo drinks his milk with both, you know, the glass propped up on the fingertips of both his hands as he goes, and then he puts it down like that. And you think, oh no, he drinks like Donald Trump.
At least he stands normally.
Yes. Well, if Donald Trump could wear a pyramid hat, maybe we'd have a real problem.
Oh, man. That might be a good look.
Let's get to our segment on the show, Boom or Bust, where we talk about the things that we see on the show that have gone the way of the dodo, like Coke in green glass bottles. You just can't get them anymore. And I think the best example I could think of this week would be the traditional children's television show. In this case, it's Captain Galaxy. Shows like Howdy Doody or Captain Kangaroo. These shows often start, you know, in local markets. This is before the syndication boom of the mid-70s. You usually had a local actor or host that would introduce the programs that you would play. And they would read letters from the children. They would sometimes play games, do a variety show. That's how that evolved into things like Howdy Doody, Bozo the Clown, Captain Kangaroo. Cartoons, I guess Saturday morning cartoons and probably video games killed that. You know, you don't have that anymore.
Yeah. They're probably like, we don't need someone to host this.
That's true. Although, being from Chicago, you know, you've got Bozo the Clown.
Bozo, yeah.
One of the biggest markets for Bozo, yeah. And like people like Svengoolie, you know, doing... introducing movies and things like that. But that's almost kitsch now. I think that just syndication and also YouTube just kind of killed that, huh?
Well, yeah, especially like, because it probably died way before YouTube, but YouTube now has like this different form of it where it's like, oh, I'm just going to watch this person who like has like reviews toys or whatever
with
his kid.
Right, yeah.
And like kids love that. It's very strange to me. But like that's the version of it now where it's just like a random guy talking about a very specific kid's thing.
I wonder if that is even a thing anymore. I mean, things like Mystery Science Theater grew up out of that, right? Just a local station having free time and just having some guy go, well, I can do something with that. And then, okay, fine, here's $200, you know, go off and make something. Boy, I just let me imagine all the creativity, which is, you know, it didn't go anywhere. It's happening, you know, in people's homes
it
now. It's happening
online.
And,
yeah.
But still, I'm old enough that I can just remember watching a show like this. There was a show I live in the Twin Cities, in my market. And it's a guy who had done it in the 50s up to the 70s. Then he quit and he came back for a couple years doing a show in the morning. And his character was Casey Jones. He was Casey Jones, the train conductor.
Cool. Okay. Yeah.
And he would do – I just remember him being like this kind of warm, kindly old guy. But I've gone back and watched some of the clips on YouTube and it was just – It's exactly what you think. It's a bunch of like 20-year-old Norwegian dudes just telling. It's like Red Green. They're just telling like inside jokes and stuff that's going over the kids' heads, but still doing like puppets and magic show type stuff. And I remember it's like one of my earliest memories that I was getting ready for school and it was time to go get on the bus. And my mom said, "Don't you want to watch Casey Jones?" And I'm like, "Oh, okay, fine." And he at the end of the show, he reads out like the happy birthdays. And the last one he read was, it was my birthday.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, whoa.
Wow. Which has already come up.
Yes.
Great payoff.
Yes. So.
That's cool.
I was like, oh my God, mind blown. Okay, let's go. Got to get on the bus.
Yeah, I was watching something recently. Like I've seen people posting now. Like, oh, here's some footage from old local access shows, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, there's people who are, like, archiving that online now.
Yeah.
And, yeah, there's somewhere I'm watching. It's just people taking calls and talking to people or, like, reading letters. And I was like, this is just, like, this is Twitch chat now where you're just, like, talking to the chat, you know.
Yeah.
I love, like, whenever I see those videos, I, like, it does give me that kind of feeling of nostalgia, and I kind of sometimes when I get into a weird niche like that, I kind of chase that feeling because it does feel like nostalgic and interesting. But I wonder if I'll feel that way about like stuff now on like online probably.
I wonder. Boy, it's not the first time we've got caught in a nostalgia hole in this show.
Yeah.
But yeah, I that's a good question. I don't mean to – I'm not trying to be disparaging of like the stuff that the kids like. But I don't – I suppose you could be – it seems like it would be tougher to be nostalgic about a YouTube video. But then again, people still think about like shoes or whatever, you know.
Yeah, yeah. When I do see some of that stuff now, that's like now it's 10 years old. And I'm like, oh,
right,
wow.
Yeah. Fire up I'm on a boat again. Let's watch that. Well, as we get to the end of our trip here, is there anything that you have left unsaid about this episode?
I think we hit all the big parts. I really did enjoy this. Oh, the theme song is so good.
Oh, yes, yes. Classic like, post theme.
Like, before anything happened, I was like, I'm already sold, yeah.
Yeah, I've talked about this before, but I love the fact that the, you know, in a concession to the fact that it is a complex premise. There's an intro to the show and then there's a theme. They're not like the same thing. The theme isn't like he traveled back in time. He's doing, you know, they don't combine them. So, you know, the lady comes on and says, you know, who he is and what happened. Then he leaps in. Then he says, oh boy. And then we get the theme.
Oh, yeah. I didn't think about that aspect.
Yeah,
I like that.
Yeah. But unlike other shows, like, you don't, there's no skip here. We don't hit skip video on this one.
No, I hate that. I never skip video.
I just like, you know, this is when the show gets meta and doesn't overdo it, I'm happy. And I love the idea in this episode of the contradiction of a guy who's traveling in time having to convince a guy that you can't travel in time. That's just, that's right up my alley. So
yeah, that exactly is what convinced me of it. I feel like I always sound like an old person, but I feel like if they made this now, it would all be the stupid meta. It would be like Doctor Who in a bad way.
Yeah, that's the Captain Galaxy reminded me of Doctor Who a lot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like throwback to that. So that's what would make me. I mean, I'm only a new fan to this, but that's what would make me skeptical of a new one is that it would just be 10 episodes, all lore. He doesn't go back and meet. You know,
right?
like it's going to be only really important people to, you know, it, I don't know.
There's six different time periods, and in each time period, I have to collect the time crystal or something, help so and so pass their, you know, their SAT or something. Yeah, yeah, a little too complicated. Just have the lady tell you what happens at the beginning, and we just get right to it.
Yeah, just hang out with hang out with a guy for 40 minutes. Yeah. Basically, was what was good about this.
Yeah, for sure. Well, it's time for this week's Leaping to Conclusions trivia question. This episode takes place in St. Louis, Missouri. St. Louis is known as the Gateway to the West, and the Gateway Arch opened in 1967 to commemorate that. But there's another National Historic Monument just a few blocks away in downtown St. Louis that opened in 1894 that actually cemented St. Louis's reputation as the Gateway to the West. What is that monument called? And of course, we'll have our answer for that question next week. But first, let's take a look ahead at what's coming up next week. As we see at the end of this episode, Sam has leapt into, I don't know. What do you think?
Oh, I kind of forgot. Was there like...
Dressed up like Zorro?
Yeah. Oh, it was like strip club type situation, right?
It did seem like that. It's an episode called Private Dancer, where Sam leaps into Rod McCarty. Oh, my God. A.K.A. Rod the Bod, a Chippendales dancer who must help a deaf woman find success as a professional dancer before she goes down a road of prostitution and dies of AIDS several years later. Oh, my God.
What the?
First of all, there's like 14 hats there. That's a lot of hats.
Yeah, it was like, this sentence will end someday.
Yes, but second of all, we get to see how this show deals with the AIDS epidemic. And I think the answer might surprise you. But it will have to surprise somebody else, because your time on this leap is at an end, Gooey. Thanks so much for joining me. I hope you had fun.
Yeah, I'm a leaper now.
That's awesome. Don't become an evil leaper. We don't do that.
No, never.
Gooey, tell people where they can find you and Virtual Theater online.
You can find me. I'm on Twitter. I'm at Gooey Fame. And Virtual Theater is on Twitter at Virtual Theater X.
Awesome. And that is it for this week's episode of It's About Time. You can always find us on Twitter at QL It's About Time, all one word, or email us at QLItsAboutTime@gmail.com. This is Caliban for Gooey Fame, hoping that the next pod will be the pod home.